news and reports on SEO. It's Mr. SEO, Joe Balestrino.
Hi, this is Joe Balestrino, owner-operator of MrSEO.com, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I am talking with Anthony Muller. How you doing, Anthony?
Hey.
You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right.
I just want to thank you for letting me interview you. I know you're a busy guy, and I remember when I asked you to do the interview with me, and I told you, I said, if you came on the interview, it would be really cool. You would help me out a lot. It probably wouldn't do anything for you, and you were still okay with that, and you were more than happy to come on board and do the interview with me. And so I just want to maybe give you an opportunity to tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I figured this would be a cool opportunity to have a podcast, an SEO podcast that actually sounds like an episode of an upcoming Sopranos show or something along those lines.
With both our accents going?
We could do the SEOmafia.com or something along those lines, you know. All right, background. So I guess I could start with what I originally went into, which was psychology. Graduated, went into New York City social work, which was a fun job, 26 grand a year and, you know, all the stress you could handle. So I got out of that real quick, self-taught myself SEO, and this is back in, late 90s. Then after that, I got involved with writing that marketing Sherpa report, the first edition. Kind of came up with this idea since the whole industry was filled with a bunch of hacks. You know, it was really, we didn't have a great name, didn't have a lot of respect in the industry. So came up with the idea to kind of call each SEO company, pretend that I was a customer, and ask them what they would do for my site, show me examples and everything else. And so we rated and reviewed, I think it was like 30 companies, SEO companies, the first go around. That kind of took the industry by storm. A lot of people pissed off, lawsuits, the whole nine. I'm sure you could actually still find information about it to this day. My publisher and I kind of had differences of opinion based on the guide. And being a former social worker, didn't know too much about contracts. So my initial idea and everything was kind of, quote-unquote, work for hire. So if anybody doesn't know what that means, if you ever see a contract that says work for hire on it, do not sign it. That was pretty stupid, but you learn the hard way, you know.
Yeah,
basically, yeah, right, exactly. Well, you know, you think somebody's your friend, you know, and you talk to them very often, then you bring an idea, you think you could trust them, you know, but, yeah, I guess you'd think you'd be smarter growing up in New York, but, you know, it just so happened that I wasn't. So then, anyway, during that time, right after September 11th, I was asked to start up SEO panels on the AdTech conferences. Are you familiar with AdTech?
AdTech, yeah. I mean, I go there all the time.
Yeah, okay. So basically, right after September 11th, they had, like, nobody was signing up to come. It was at the Javits Center. I think it was a month after September 11th. And
that was the old Javits Center or the new Javits Center?
Was that the old one. That was the original.
Okay.
I think, 2001, yeah.
That would have probably been the old one, maybe. I know they moved the location or they did something with that.
It was the original Javits Center or the original location. And so I hadn't been back since that was, I think, the last one they did at the Javits Center. You know, so they asked me to create the panels. I flew in, you know, Detlev Johnson and Heather Martin, a whole bunch of names, and basically we started the SEO panels there. I did that for a couple years. I think there were two a year. One was in L.A. and one was somewhere in New York, you know, either at a Hilton or somewhere in a hotel. And that grew. I think when it first started, the SEO exhibitors or search engine related exhibitors were about, you know, maybe one, if there were any, at the conference. And now you go to AdTech and the whole exhibit floor is mostly search related, you know.
Right.
The Interactive Advertising Conference. So that was pretty cool. And then for a while, I took a hiatus off of doing a lot of, you know, industry-related stuff, and I really focused on building my business, got a lot of large clients, and really focused on honing my skills as a consultant and an internet marketer. Then just recently with Dana Todd, Finn Downhill, and a few others had, you know, helped be a thrust behind this whole SEMPO Institute initiative to really get some training in the industry so agencies can start to hire people with at least a basic knowledge of SEO, and that you could feel or rest assured that the basic knowledge was focused on best practices and not, you know, hey, yeah, I used to work for some guy, had this little program that spam blogs, you know, something along those lines, you know.
So how do you guys determine, like, what's the best practices? Because, you know, you get 10 SEOs in a room, and each one's got their own methods, and one guy will say meta tags dead, the other guy will say, you know, meta tags are, you know, the thing. So, I mean, how do you guys determine, like, what's good and what's crap?
Yeah, pretty much it's peer-reviewed. So there's a lot of different industry experts that created the different modules, right? So my major contribution was the glossary, which was a lot of fun to write, let me tell you. Then, you know, Bruce Clay, I think, wrote the module on, was it tagging? I can't for the life of me remember, but there was plenty of names that went into it. And basically what it was is focused on the grassroots best practices. And really, you know, when we talk about the training, right? So, yeah, title tags, meta tags, you may be talking about, you know, you may hear a guy that says, yeah, they're not as effective as they used to be, or keywords tags is ridiculous, don't even bother, right? But it's good to be training people that kind of base knowledge. You know, they need to know about that stuff. So, you know, you teach them about linking, you teach them about meta tags, you teach them about content and keyword density and keyword research and, you know, all of the very basic good design. And then from there, you know, that's the fundamentals course. And then the advanced course really focuses on, you know, advanced linking and advanced, you know, keyword copywriting and everything else. As far as the strategies, we steered clear of any strategies that wouldn't be endorsed by a search engine, right? So as someone like Greg Bozer would say, you know, I think, I don't want to misquote him, but his definition of spam are all the sites that rank above you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's, you know, and not to say that cloaking doesn't work or maybe spam doesn't work, but, you know, we're in an industry where we have a symbiotic relationship with the search engines, and you know, it's always best practice to, you know, kind of fall within that guideline.
Right, right. Okay. I have a few questions here that some people wrote in. Now, they're not really tailored to you. If I knew, you know, ahead of time that I was going to be able to corner you and get you on here, I would have tailored some things a little bit, you know, more towards your expertise since you've been in the business for quite a long time.
Right.
It's all guesswork, anyway.
You need me to money, Mo. That's
yeah,
the bottom line.
I just have a dart in my office, and I just throw a dart, and just, you know, it'll hit something, and I'll...
A dart at a keyword chart? Right, it hits the keyword. Okay, that's what we're optimizing for today.
Okay, so let's see what questions I have here. All right, so here's one that says, what tools and software do you use on a daily basis? Now, I know you have some large clients, and you probably do this on a large scale, but are there any particular softwares that you use, like WebCEO or SEO Elite or anything like that?
No, you know, I mean, when it comes down to what I do, very little of it is automated or that I use tools for. You know, larger clients, they do have some, you know, Freudian desires, if you will, so they want to know that some of their main terms are way high up there, but we're talking about a list of, you know, maybe 10 or 20 real core terms for them. And it's not like something I'm checking on every 24-hour basis. If the CEO kind of looks, he's up there, he's happy with that, right? But we all know that the main success of that comes with, you know, maybe the 50, 100, 500,000 other rankings you have, you know, for that same client that's bringing in the bulk of the traffic. So I really don't use anything to detect rankings or track that. When you talk about tools, I mean, SEO tools, I really don't use. Maybe keyword research tools, but that's about the extent of that. When we talk about, you know, measurement and analysis, that's where, you know, server stats and the like will come into play. So, you know, and that's really dependent on the specific client. So they might be using Omniture. They may be using Website Story. There's a whole bunch, you know, and some others are using kind of crappy web trends versions, you know. But those are the tools of the trade, the way I see it. You know, density analysis and all that other thing, I guess it depends on the level of optimization that you're doing. If it's a smaller site, maybe doing some density analysis, you know, some path analysis, that type of thing might really be effective, but when you're talking about a site with, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages, there's really no tools that you use. Most of what I do is, you know, based on rule sets and dynamic generation.
So how much of your research and work on SEO involves analytics? Do you look much into analytics?
Yeah, a lot. You know, that's kind of the second thrust in any campaign, right? So your first thrust, when you're looking at analytics, you're looking at benchmarking, really, right? You're looking at, okay, are there any things that are sticking out here, like, blaringly? So are you seeing, you know, what's your top entrance page? What's your top exit page? That type of stuff. But really, benchmarking, you want to see, okay, what's your average page view per visitor? Where are they coming as far as levels deep into the website? What terms are you getting traffic for? You know, you want to look at that stuff, but that's in phase one, it's really mainly benchmarking. Then phase two, after you do a lot of your initial optimization, what you're looking for is, okay, how much better are we doing? How much additional uniques are we getting or referrals from the search are we getting? You know, then you might have somebody, and you know, when we talk about SEO, I do that, but a lot of times my role kind of bleeds into other areas. So, for example, the typical SEO, if you were to ask him, how do I get more page views for my site, you know, he's automatically going to think, well, you know, get more traffic. You know what I'm saying?
Because we know a lot that, you know, I don't know about page views, but I guess I'm thinking more of the lines of traffic. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, traffic to actually drop when you start doing optimization because the traffic is a bit more targeted.
Right. Right. Well, this you know, when I'm talking about different areas, I'm talking about mainly moving into more of a usability area. So the user experience. So, for example, I can't give you the company name, but a CEO will say to me, you know, I want my page views increased by 20%. Is that possible? You know, so then I got to look at the website and I got to say, okay, how would we do this? You know, and then you have to look at, and I'll give you an example, pagination, right? So say you have an article that's 700 words, right? It's a pretty big article. and it's all on one page. You have to kind of balance out and say, well, if I paginate all these articles and create a page two, that's going to create a lot of additional page views, right?
Right.
It's kind of off the SEO spectrum chart, but it's something that affects the users and affects your client's bottom line, which you need to keep them happy with, right, so you can keep that client and keep the dollars rolling in on that side. But also, you know, and from an SEO perspective, when you do something like that, you're cutting the amount of content for that one URL in half, right? So you have to kind of figure out, okay, what are ways to do this so we don't sacrifice our rankings, don't sacrifice our traffic, and are able to increase the page views.
Right, right, right. Oh, that's good to point out. That's some good stuff there. You know, No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say a lot of times, and it's a dying analogy, but you would hear a lot of SEOs say, you know, my job is to bring the horse to water, but you know, it's not my job to get him to buy something or to get him to drink, right? As time goes on, you know, your clients are going to be looking to you more and more for additional information on how to make their site successful. And certainly, as we all know, being SEOs, traffic is the majority of that battle, right? But if you're getting a crappy site that has all sorts of issues and you can't identify them, you know, millions and millions of visitors, if you can't figure out what the other issues are that might play into usability. So maybe they're, you know, they're timing out, their 301s are done wrong, their robot's text is all screwed up. You know, there could be a million issues. So identifying those issues are sometimes equally as important to the client and their success. And when you solve those kinds of issues for your clients, which might be outside the main spectrum of SEO, you're almost guaranteeing yourself a long-term relationship with that client.
Right. I mean, usability is a big part of SEO, and you know, when I work with clients, it's not just, you know, SEO. I mean, if you look at a site and your client goes, I need SEO done. I mean, the first thing you look at is the site. I mean, if the site looks like it was designed in 1989, I mean, it's not going to be appealing to people today. So, I mean, you know, you have to make adjustments. Maybe a new redesign's in order. Maybe, you know, the site structure, you know, people add pages on after a design, and sometimes it's not laid out the best for the user or the search engine. So there's a lot more that's involved than just, you know, this standard SEO that I think all falls under the umbrella of doing actual SEO.
Yeah, yeah, and I like, you know, I mean, we're definitely search engine marketers, but, you know, I think in some way we're really becoming more than search marketers. We're becoming internet marketers and website marketers. You know, there's this all-encompassing term, just internet marketing. If it's online, we know how to market it, you know. I think that's a big part.
Yeah, I mean, marketing is you know, when I talk to other people and I say, well, you do search engine optimization, it's kind of, to me, it's more than that. It's not just about getting the traffic. It's not just about the usability. It's about, well, how are you going to have people to come back? Well, you know, how do you get someone to sign up to a newsletter? How do you get someone to make a purchase? You know, there's a whole bunch of things that bring together. Then you have social bookmarking, you have press releases, you have blogging, there's podcasting. To me, that all falls under pretty much the same kind of thing we're all trying to accomplish, whether it's using a podcast to bring in links or social bookmarking to bring in some links. I mean, it all works together. You know, it all comes together at some point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, a lot of people who listen to this podcast are actually, you know, not surprising, other SEOs. And one question I had was, what frustrates you the most when doing SEO for a client?
Knowing that other SEOs are listening to me and taking all my little techniques for me, you know, and applying them to their own clients, I think that's the most annoying. No, I'm only kidding. What most frustrates me when I'm working for a client, I mean, I guess there are two things that frustrate me. The first is, depends on the size of the client, right? And when I first started, I had a lot of smaller or mid-sized clients. What was mainly frustrating about them is, no matter how well you performed for them, on some level, they were always bitching and complaining about how much they were spending on SEO, you know? So you could take a guy, he could be making nothing on a website, and the following month he could be making $100,000 a month and be bitching about your fees, right? That's the kind of mentality that kind of pissed me off on a regular basis. Let's see, what else? For larger clients, you know, there's a different dynamic that goes on. I guess what's most frustrating for larger clients is you'll have a certain mentality that you need to operate in or break, if you will. So, you know, there'll be a resistant technical team. There'll be a resistant editorial staff to change, you know. And you have to it's only frustrating when it doesn't work too well, but you have to learn how to operate within those parameters and get them on board with optimization and with the search engines in mind, you know. So you can't be writing, you know, very catchy headlines that have nothing to do with what the article is actually about, you know. You have to balance that with something a little bit more specific, so your title doesn't say, you know, W adds more oil to the fire, and it's about, you know, ethanol being added to gasoline and George Bush, you know. I mean, so there's, you know, there's a lot of mind-altering kind of routines you have to pull on your clients when they're at the larger aspect.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've run across clients and different clients. You know, smaller clients, like you said, have different issues. It's about the money. The bigger clients, there's a whole nother issue there. And sometimes when you work with big clients, you have to work with all departments of their, you know, different departments of each company, and you have to work with the web developers, and they may have their own ideas of SEO. Then you have to work with the SEM team. And I'm not slamming SEMs, but sometimes SEMs think they know enough about SEO, and then they'll you know, you'll butt heads at some point on certain aspects of things. So
sure, and other mindsets you have, like I said before, you know, those Freudian desires. I mean, you have a CEO that wants to be number one for jobs, you know, and it doesn't matter that it really is not the most qualified term that you're trying to bring into the site. And it doesn't matter that, you know, it's a ridiculous waste of resources to be trying to get that one term, you know, that is probably going to bring in less traffic and especially less qualified traffic than, you know, 100 other terms would. But, you know, you kind of have to bite the bullet and go down that path because they're the ones paying you. And, you know, trying to convince them otherwise sometimes is just you know, it's futile, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rough situation. I mean, it always comes down to, well, you know, here's my suggestions, and that's usually how I do it. Here's my suggestions, but you know, the client usually always has the final say when it comes to something.
Right.
So when it comes to that, you know, they pay the bills. So let me see what else I have here. I got quite a bit here, but. Can you tell us a story about the best results you ever had for a client when it comes to SEO?
The best results. Every time I do SEO, I get the best results for a client. I think there's a rare instance of when I really don't have great results. But for those who are listening, best results. Okay, so one client in particular, we started doing SEO and pay-per-click for. He was originally doing about $16,000 a month in sales on his retail cart. He's a long-term name in the guitar parts industry. He's been around for 30-plus years doing what he does. But even though he's a manufacturer and he's a kind of a household name for specific things, There are a lot of other really big companies out there that are just mammoth and have mammoth budgets, and it's kind of like a David and Goliath story, right? To give you an idea, one of the companies in particular do, you know, millions and millions every quarter in sales online, and he was doing $16,000. So, you know, when we started, within, I think it was 30 days of optimizing the site, he was up to about 36 or 38,000 in sales. That was before the pay-per-click really got underway. Then we started doing the pay-per-click marketing and purposefully kind of targeting and doing techniques like bid jamming and other things, targeting his competitors who were targeting his names or products but didn't even sell them or stock them. So, for example, one company would be targeting a term, and they didn't even sell or offer the product, which is kind of asinine. But, I mean, you know, it was something they were doing just under the impression that they were really just going to completely dominate the market. So we started making their bids cost a bit more for them, and we were actually selling stuff. So we knew that this was a war of attrition that we were going to win, right? If we're paying, you know, similar amounts, but it's still very expensive, but at least we have something we could sell and recoup the cost on, that we're going to be hurting another company in the process. So as time went on, we kept growing the sales and growing the sales, and then they were, you know, closing in on the 80-some-odd thousand a month mark. Then a press release came out from another company, the competitor, that stated that their stock prices fell like $10 and something cents overnight in like in one day. And they cited search engine advertising costs as the reason that their profits had like plummeted. So that was kind of a, you know, a David and Goliath where you're armed with a sling and a limited amount of resources and you really were able to take down somebody big, you know. And he still continues to do really well today, you know. Of course, there are other issues that are involved, you know, internal resource issues and the like. But as far as success, it was a really great one. Other ones would be, you know, obtaining rankings within a relatively short period of time for terms where you weren't even really trying to target them. So one-word terms that have, you know, hundreds of millions of competition on it, and you're right up there. You know, those were kinds of small successes where, you know, when it's pointed out, you're like, wow, you know. I would say those are kind of the victories I've been most proud of.
So when you talk about, and you mentioned like a new site, so, you know, especially for some reason recently I've been getting a lot of people interested in doing SEO that have a brand new site, and I know I think most SEOs won't touch a brand new site, but if somebody's listening and they're thinking about launching a site, what would you say is probably the most important thing that they have to make sure that they do and the most important thing that they shouldn't do when starting to, you know, work on SEO on their website?
Well, I would have to say that the most important thing that they do is, you know, and it's going to be a bunch of things. You know, there is no one silver bullet in SEO, right? You have to pay attention to a bunch of different elements. But definitely some of the most important things that they should do with a new site is ensure that they have a lot of useful content on it, right? Because with that content and original, unique content, it's useful, it's attractive, it's going to give them a good foundation to build on, right, and to optimize for. One thing they shouldn't do is get overzealous, right? So, for example, you mentioned that a lot of SEOs won't touch new sites. I, on the other hand, I like new sites because, I mean, how hard is it to increase nothing into something? You know, whereas when you come on board with a site that might be SEO'd well already or might be doing great, you know, it's a lot harder to get those kind of dramatic result effects, you know. But in any case, you know, the newer sites, don't get overzealous with optimizing. You know, make sure that you really curb the expectations of the client. make sure they understand that it's a long-term process when something is brand new, and understand how to build it and all the elements involved in building it and getting their name out there, the press releases, the links, you know, that type of stuff. So definitely a don't do is get overzealous.
Right. So, you know, you just not to go crazy with the whole optimization and in general.
And one way to set yourself up for failure is if your client thinks that you're going to do some work on the new site and then overnight it's going to all of a sudden be number one and getting a crap load of traffic, you know, from a brand new site. You really got to curtail his expectations and make sure he's on board and understands before you start working on it that it's going to take a while. And by doing so, you'll prevent yourself from being in that position where the client is all, his expectations are all blown out of whack and he's kind of yelling at you, how come we're not rich? We're 20 days into this, you know, and you have to kind of try and pull some tricks in order to fix things, you know.
So what do you tell a client when he comes to you and say, hey Anthony, I got a brand new site. You know, what's it going to take and how long and how much? Well, you don't have to answer the how much part, but you know, how long is it going to take and you know to get me to the top of the search engines?
Well, you know, the first thing that I do is I make sure that they understand the process. You know, so I'll say to them, look, you know, as far as how long, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, first I'll talk to them about internet marketing general, and I'll tell them that there's a lot of factors for success online, right? So the prices of your product, your margins, I mean, all these things factor into how successful you're going to be when you're starting up a new site or business, right? Then the second thing I do to really curb his expectations is I say you have to at least give it 6 months from being a new site to start to see results. And those results we can continue to build on. I make sure that he understands that he is going to play a pivotal role in the success of the site, you know, and his feedback, his, you know, being able to offer advice and content and that sort of thing for his site is really important. You know, and then always make sure that I tell him, you know, not everything is a sure thing. You know, not everything is 100%. You know, there is, you know, after you've been doing this a while, you can look at a site, you can look at a business model, take a glance at it, and or even the idea, and say, yeah, this is going to work, or no, this, you know, you're going down the wrong path, buddy. And I'll give you an idea, especially for search. An example, one client, well, not a client, a potential client, had called me up, and he was looking to sell this brand new, groundbreaking, innovative thing. It was kind of like a motivational speech therapy tape, something or other, right? And, you know, he wanted to, you know, do like motivational speaking and all sorts of terms, like the brand name of this product that nobody was searching for, right? I mean, there was no demand for this product. And he was thinking that he's going to get it ranked high in the search engines. And all of a sudden, billions of people are going to flood in and buy his, you know, tape, you know. And I had to really say to him straight out, I had to say, look, I kind of did some keyword research, you know. So for the general terms, there's really barely anybody looking for this stuff. And I said, for your product, there's nobody looking for this stuff yet because it's so new.
It doesn't exist.
Right. It doesn't even exist, right. So I said to him, I said, look, I can get you number one positions, but in the end, you're not really going to get much from this. I don't think, you know, what you expect to happen in reality is going to happen. And you know what? I didn't make money off of him, but he was respectful of what I said. And, you know, in the end, you know, you're doing the right thing, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, with an accent like yours, if you tell me to do something, I'm probably going to do it, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, right. Otherwise, you got to send Vinny and the boys down.
I feel like when I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking to, like, one of my brother or one of my cousins, because it's just like, you know, it's that thing, you know, if we sat in a room together with the right type of outfits, you know, we'd probably know we were staying within 10 feet of us.
Right. Well, you know, the problem is I hope none of your listeners are from frickin' Idaho or something like that. Otherwise, they're probably hiding under the bed right now. Who the hell are these retards talking on the line, you know?
It's worked so far. I mean, the podcast has done great. People don't mind putting up with my Brooklyn accent. I have a cousin whose accent is so thick, you could barely make out what he's saying unless you really concentrate. And I'm tempted to bring him on here just one time, just so that he can say one sentence, so that people can compare the difference in, you know. And you're in Long Island, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you have that accent that, you know, it's kind of similar to mine, but you can still tell the difference.
Right. Yeah. There was a mishmash. You know, I grew up out on Long Island in Nassau County, and then I lived for a while in Brooklyn. And then, you know, kind of moved back out here. But it's funny, I was born with this accent, you know. I mean, people think somewhere along the line I got the accent, but I think it was somewhere in my genetic coding, you know, with all the family members in my family, which with last names of, like, Carlucci and Tartaglia. And, you know, I mean, it was in my genetics. I really had little choice in the matter.
Yeah.
If I grew up in Idaho, I'd be speaking like this, I think.
You know, it's you know, the accent is definitely unique. I mean, especially people out in the UK, they totally appreciate the Brooklyn accent. So
they love it. Yeah, they love it out there.
They absolutely love it.
They get a big kick out of it, especially the little words that are different. So when we're here and we're talking about cruising, you know, we're talking about, you know, being young, getting in the car, and bothering women. Right?
Right, exactly.
You know, like, hey, get in the car, you know, whatever. But in the UK, when you mention the word cruising, you're talking about, you know, getting in a car with a bunch of your buddies and looking for people of the same sex to get in your car with you. Yeah, it's more of a homosexual connotation in the UK. So there are a lot of those words that are kind of similar but a little bit different over there, which kind of makes for some funny stuff, you know.
Right, I can just imagine all the podcasts that we have. I mean, you know, I don't hide the fact that I'm Italian. Obviously, you know, my last name, my accent, I mean, there's really, if you can't figure out I'm Italian, there's a problem somewhere. Now I just forgot what the hell I was going to say, but, now I just lost train of thought, which is messed up, because it was going to be pretty funny, I think. I don't hide the fact that, you know, I'm Italian, and my partner Alan, he'll come on the podcast once in a while, and he'll talk like an old Italian lady, and he'll say that I'm so Italian that I have sauce through my veins and stuff. So, I mean, you know, I make light of it because, you know, I am in Brooklyn, I am Italian, so, I mean, you know, some of the stereotypical things Italian people do, yeah, I wear, you know, a white T-shirt, and I have a gold chain, so, you know, shoot me, you know, it's just,
right.
You know, it's who
yeah.
I am,
hey,
you know,
man,
what am I going to do?
It's a lot better than some of the other parts of the country, you know, I mean, come on, you never see anybody from New York on the Jerry Springer show, right? I mean, you know, all of those people are not from New York, that's all I got to say, right there.
Exactly. I don't want to get too far off the topic, because,
I'm an expert in a lot of things, you know, not just SEO. Unfortunately, I've been on this earth too many years, so.
You're not that old. Come on.
I'm feeling it.
Gary, let me hit you with one more question, then I'll let you go, but I'll probably address you anyways later on. What do you think is a good reliable tactic to get links? Is it doing social bookmarking? Is it buying links? You know, is it, you know, doing article submissions? I mean, link exchanges. I mean, what do you think is a safe bet at this point with Google, you know, take, you know, over the years saying link exchanges were good at one point, now they're no good. Now, you know, buying links is on debate now. So, I mean, what do you think is, like, a, you know, a safe way to go or the best way to go?
Yeah, you know, I've never felt comfortable buying links or, you know, going down that road. I think really the safest, best way to do things is to either create content that compels people to socially bookmark it or link to it. You know, to give you an idea, one of my clients has a virtual guitar builder that's hooked into his shopping cart, right? So in Flash, you can actually build this guitar and see it as you're building it and trade out a bunch of bodies and necks and all sorts of little doodads, you know. And you wind up getting a lot of links from cool little things. I think the Flash animation, well, you know, the interactive Flash thing, I think it costs us $400. And we wound up getting a lot of business from it, you know. So in a way, you kind of are buying links, but you're doing it in a little bit of a different way. You know, you're creating compelling content, really, really trying to get people to link to you. You know, something controversial, something interesting, something informative, you know, the best tactic for SEO, proven, you know, whatever. I mean, I'd be full of crap if I said there was one. But, you know, there's a lot of content that you could generate to generate those links. Then, you know, something along the lines of what you're kind of fond of doing, you know, creating press releases, creating content, giving it to other sites in exchange for a link back, you know, as the author, something along those lines. That's a very viable technique. The link exchanges, yeah, I wouldn't go down that road. Buying links, if you're getting them from a source that's a decent network, a decent source, right? So are you buying links on a huge national newspaper? Or are you buying links on, you know, Joe Schmo's, you know, 40 porn sites that are linking to you? You know, I mean,
right.
I don't think you can get in trouble by buying links. I don't see how there's, you know, you will hear people saying, well, Google's going to penalize you if you buy links. That, you know, how? I mean, then you could just buy links to your competitor and get them nuked off the face of the planet, you know? Like we talked about the other day, the link assassination, right?
Right, right. I remember that. You were telling about that.
Yeah, you're going to pay a few hundred bucks to get your competitor banned. Yeah, it can't happen. The worst thing that I think can happen if you buy links is that you waste your money because they're really ineffective. You know, they don't give you any benefit, you know.
Well, but if you're buying them for traffic and not for PR, I mean, it still might be worth, you know, the money. I mean, if I spent $300 on a link and, you know, I made a, you know, $2,000 order,
Sure. And that's also, I mean, again, that goes to what kind of sites are you buying it on? I mean, are you selling Bibles and the links are appearing on porn sites? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's got to be something, you know.
I think that's immoral. I don't think that's something you can do.
What's that?
selling Bibles and putting them on porn sites. I think you'd be committing some kind of...
Don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating the advertising of Bibles on porn sites. But what I am saying is that a lot of these link selling companies will tell you that they'll put your links on their network, and you don't really know what their network is.
Right.
Their
network could be a bunch of spam sites or a bunch of blogger, you know, blogs, and just sticking links on there.
Exactly. So what I mean by the Bible and the porn is more the relevance of the sites to your product. I mean, are they going to be qualified visitors if they come through those links, you know?
So what about this? Is site links good or site links bad, site-wide links?
Site-wide links?
Yeah. I if I bought, you know, a link on the footer of a 1,000-page site, is that going to hurt me or is that going to do me some good?
I don't know if it'll hurt you, but I don't know if it's going to help you, you know, 1,000 times or just once. You know what I'm saying? So it's probably better that if you do have a link from a footer somewhere, that you just have one. You know, if somebody was charging me the same amount for 1,000 as they were one, I would take the one. You know what I'm saying? Because that one link. The homepage, yeah, that's generally the best place to get it because, you know, everybody tends to link to the homepage of a site, you know, when they're referencing. You know, 9 out of 10 or maybe 7 out of 10 people do.
All right. Okay, well, that's cool. I think I've taken up enough of your time. I know you're a busy guy and you got a lot of things to do.
Well, hey, if there's any other questions, I don't mind answering them.
Well, yeah, that's you know, I call you and harass you on my own time, so that's...
You don't want to give too much away, huh?
I don't want to give too much away. I'll call you and harass you during the week or something, or crank call you or whatever it is, you know, I decide to do.
Not a problem.
Is there anything that you want to plug? Do you have anything that, you know, some information if people want to contact you?
Well, you know, I only work on a referral basis. I'm sure that this will go on your site. So if anybody had additional questions or follow-up questions, you know, I guess they could just pose the questions to you, and then the next time maybe we can address it. You know, we'll do another one of these things. I think that's about it. If anybody out there wants to thank me, they could go get me a link to my tattoo client, newyorktattoo.com. That's all spelled out. And I'd be much appreciative. Just no spam links. I don't want 1,000 links in the footer somewhere pointing to that damn site. Just find something relevant. Get me a link.
Yeah, okay. That's great. You know, I appreciate it. I always like talking to you.
Yeah, hey, I'll tell you what. If my page rank does go up by the next time we do this, I'll give some real good information, some inside information next time.
Oh, you hear that? That's great. So we got to get that PR up. So if we
just make sure they spell tattoo right. Too many people misspell it, you know.
That's an easy word to misspell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, it is.
It's an easy word to misspell. All right. Thanks, Anthony. I appreciate, you know, and thank you again for your time.
All right, Joe. I'll speak to you soon.
This concludes this episode of the Mr. SEO Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this interview. Tune in next week as we interview Carl Rebus and we talk about pay-per-click, how to make ads more relevant, little inside tips, landing pages, and much more. It should be a great interview. Also, don't forget to check out MrSEO.net. There you can buy domain names for as little as $1.99. We also have hosting and other website packages. Check it out. Also, if you're a web developer or a search engine marketing company and you're looking to offer SEO services, contact me at joe@mr-seo.com. We have some materials that you can put on your website, and we'll be more than happy to work with your company and even fly under your flag, so to speak, and provide SEO services to your clients. Thank you.